There is no 5.1 mix for this episode, as it's just the two of us. This is the 12th episode, but we recorded it 16th in June 2023. Welcome to By Hook or By Crook. The UFO cast does The Prisoner. Now, this is an odd episode for us, because we don't have a number three. It's just me, Michael, from the Tin Dog Podcast, and my colleague...
Luke, from, well, this podcast, really, these days.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, formerly of loads of things, but you know,
formerly of other things, yes.
Yeah, well, Captain Scarlet stuff was lovely, anyway.
Right. Yes, and Joe 90 will follow.
Right.
Eventually. It took me about 2 years from start to finish to do the Captain Scarlet. So if I say that I'm doing Joe 90, don't expect to hear it anytime soon.
So we did have a number three, but due to unforeseen circumstances, we don't have a number three. What we have got is a story to talk about. So it's just us. If you don't mind, oh, incredibly intelligent and probably attractive listener, we're going to be discussing Change of Mind together, just us.
Yes, which... I guess we haven't done this kind of thing since the UFO cast, where it was just us discussing each episode.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's a hell of a lot easier to organise if it's just us.
Yes, it is a hell of a lot easier. I mean, it's funny, though, that we're recording this now, because we are recording this the night before we finally release episode zero, which is a conversation that you and I had, just the two of us, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
When we started this whole process, and so dear listener, you will hear this episode that we're recording now in about 12 weeks' time, but we are excited to finally start releasing these episodes to the world.
I'll tell you what, I will be downloading it because I forgot what I said, and I actually want to listen.
Yeah, whereas I've listened to it a couple of times in the edit, and I say edit very loosely. There's been very few cuts to any of the episodes that we're releasing.
Excellent.
But it's just a kind of tidying up and levels and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's a good conversation, and hopefully we can have another good one today, Michael.
Well, hopefully. So, Change of Mind. This is, for me, the... right, so if Arrival is the purest kind of prisoner episode, this is the purest, like, mind episode for me.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because it deals with... All right, you know what? Even after all these episodes, we've only got two left to record. I still haven't actually grasped. Are we discussing this as if the listener has seen the episode? I mean, is it possible to spoil something that's 60 years old? You're here for The Prisoner.
I think we're assuming that the listener has watched the episode that we're about to discuss, but none of the ones in the future.
No, that's fair enough. We've all watched it, and then we're in the pub.
Yes, and I think in terms of spoilers, I've tended to any direct references to what happens at the end. I've tended to kind of put in a spoiler section at the end of an episode.
But that's fair enough.
I don't think there really is anything in this episode that pertains to where the series finally ends up. This feels quite self-contained.
Yeah.
Do you think? You're
right. That is exactly why I'm comparing it to Arrival, which is a very self-contained story. And this is self-contained in the sense of... They're still trying to get out of number six, the one piece of information he wants split. But they're going about it in... as we said just a few minutes ago, in a way that is very, very pertinent to now, which is weird. I mean, it's 60 years ago, and it is, you're watching it and you're going, well, that's a bit on the head. You hit it on the nail there. You've just got it. And
so, okay, so yeah, we've both watched this in the last day or so, and we've both come away with that reaction. But I'd be intrigued to hear from you what it is about the storyline of this that you think is pertinent to today. Because we might be on completely different pages, but I suspect we're heading in the same direction.
I'm probably thinking that it's cancellation culture and it's the threat of it to a celebrity, and the celebrity doesn't care, but they're threatened with all sorts. And it's also something that apparently the ruling people have, I mean, obviously that's not the case, but they have nothing, no control over. It's the citizens who've decided. But then, of course, you've got the citizens who, they're not just represented by the people in the stripy shirts. You've got your Mary Whitehouse characters as well, which predates Mary Whitehouse. But they're the ones saying, oh, he's a disruptive influence. That's where it's at. But I don't know. I'll shut up and hear yours.
No, I mean, I think the phrase cancel culture is obviously quite a fraught one.
Yes.
You have people who say, no, cancel culture doesn't exist. You just have consequences culture, that when somebody is hounded on social media or vilified or loses their job for saying something that they shouldn't, that's just legitimate consequences for what they've said or done. It's just, you're just being held accountable, is what people say. And then there's other people who kind of cry, I've been cancelled, and then they seem to have umpteen places
Netflix
where you
specials.
hear them yeah. talking about it. So you have those two extremes, and I think the truth is somewhere in the middle of that. And I suppose this episode is a bit more, well, I suppose this episode, they couldn't have kind of predicted how it would play out online.
No.
But this is a sort of like, this is what would happen if your community was enclosed, as it were.
It's a bottle.
And therefore, yeah. Yes. There's much more scope for, and I like the way you drew out, well, is it the citizens? Is it the state? Who is actually acting here?
Yeah.
But the idea that, like, an individual could be ostracised.
Because number two does say, oh, I've got no control over this. It's very serious. And you're like, what? This is new. But then again, you always think in every episode, oh, this is new. And it's the wrong foot you. And I don't think number six can see that it's anything other than just another attempt by the village to trick him.
Yes.
Within the context of the story. But because yes. we're stuck in 2023 looking in, we're as guilty as everyone of just laying on our view to the text in front of us.
Yes.
Because that's the text. But the story is, he is unmutual, which is yes. the thing that a lot of people, I mean, even the Prisoner Fan Club, one of them's called The Unmutual. So they've taken this story to heart. The problem with this episode for me is that it splits really, really clearly into two. It's
okay.
got the whole society choosing a victim and that, and then they're turning him into an outcast. There's a Twilight Zone I'll talk about in a minute that I wanted to reference, but that's really interesting. And then it just goes, it's as if they got a memo halfway through and they went, lads, we're a spy program, remember? Oh, yeah, you know, let's do some more spy-type stuff where we can interrogate them and threaten them with a lobotomy, which, again, we need to talk about in a minute as well, with the torture room, with the unmutual and the ball and the guy squaring and then the little scars on the forehead and all that business.
Yeah.
So it kind of... There's not exactly a grinding of gears, because there's a bit of honest tension of the woman just reading things out in metric as a little light moves. But that
scene was really weird.
Yeah.
Like, her performance was really weird in that scene. And you're like, well, clearly that was intentional, because she doesn't act like that in the rest of the show.
No.
But it's like she's talking to her audience like they're thick.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
That's the thing that made you think of social media as well, because the people of the village are invited to watch on closed circuit TV...
Yes.
The treatment. And let's face it, right? Say, we'll call them Person X, because everyone listening to this is going to have a different take on it. So let's invent a celebrity called Person X that nobody likes, okay? They've got something against them. And if you could remotely watch that person suffer, I'm pretty sure a lot of people on Twitter would sign up to that, to watch the celebrity they don't like.
Well, should we make it concrete? Because okay.
There's at least four I can think of.
Well,
so
I'm just,
which one?
Yeah. So we're recording this the day after Pat Robertson died.
Hmm.
Now, I'm not an American, so I'm kind of slightly removed from this, but my understanding is that he was quite a hateful conservative Christian.
With extreme links
with
to
some
the
quite extreme,
dodgy party. Yeah.
Some quite extreme views. And as a Christian, I would want to distance myself from him, from what I know of him.
So you're talking about this right-wing, quite fundamentalist, especially from our, you know, cosy Church of England point of view.
Yes.
Someone who identifies as a Christian.
Yes.
The sort of person who spends a lot of time quoting the Old Testament.
Yes.
And really isn't into forgiveness and all that.
The reason
anyway,
that
he's died.
Yeah, so the reason that I bring him up is just I've been fascinated by what I've seen on my social media feeds, which has been universally pretty much from my American Christian friends condemning him for, maybe condemning is the wrong word, but basically saying this was the wrong picture of Christianity that he had. And then another section, so and that's mainly Facebook. And then on Twitter, it's pretty much wall to wall. I hope he's burning in hell, or I hope the devil is torturing him in hell, or I hope the devil is doing something particularly gay to him in hell because he hated gay people.
Yes,
which
that's
I
a
think
fair
is,
assumption.
Which I think is, I think is, I just think it's absolutely fascinating that people who don't believe in hell are going, well, I wish hell did exist just for this one person.
Weirdly, you know? That's exactly what I tweeted the other day. You know, the hard bit about being an atheist is that some people who you want to have burnt in hell won't.
Yeah.
Because they're just dead.
Yeah.
Because someone like Jimmy Savile, your brain goes, oh, I really hope they're suffering. And then you think, why am I thinking like that? I'm not a nice person. And then you go, oh, they're not suffering. They got away with it. You see, that's part of the mechanics of hell. And also, there's the whole business with Jesus breaking down the doors of hell so that nobody goes to hell. Everyone gets to go. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Because right? You know what?
You don't
for someone
believe
who doesn't
it.
Believe, I spent a long time reading up on the mythology. I probably know more than most. It's not a healthy... It's like not enjoying Star Trek and knowing every episode of Star Trek off by heart. It's just stupid. But anyway, it is odd. And you're right. The reaction on Twitter has been almost universally, the guy wasn't a practicing Christian. He just called himself that. He didn't have love in his heart. He didn't. What he had was power and hate, and was using that hate to control and divide people, which is a very un-Christian thing to do.
Yes. To generalise it as you wanted to generalise it initially,
yeah,
we can see that kind of hate, I think is the right word.
Okay.
At one end, dislike, yeah, but all the way up to kind of hate. For any number of figures in public life who have any number of political views from all the way from the right to the left, right? Mm. And you can kind of sort of tell what somebody's politics is sort of by the people that they hate, you know, that kind of that idea of like, well, if this person doesn't like that person, that means they must be on this side, you know.
Yeah.
Which is all
and it always
and
does your head in when you it's come all... across someone that you don't like and someone you really don't like not liking them either, and you're like, well, the enemy of my enemy is not my friend,
yeah,
not on this one. Yeah. But however, simultaneously, we've also got this week the Philip Schofield thing, right?
Yes,
in this country, which
exactly.
is
exactly
but. What you've got is a lot of people, again on Twitter, going, we're now sick of this. You're now using this as a distraction to keep us away, to keep us from not looking at the teacher strikes, the railway strikes, the power strike, all of the strikes that are going on. They're using that to distract from how terrible, and they're blaming Little Boats or whatever, you know, all of the normal things that are in the news. They're using, there's a guy who had an affair at work, and they're using that to vilify. Now, no, they're all implying that he's dodgy because he's got a dodgy brother, right? And that's just implied. And they're going, oh. But that's, we as the viewers are feeling, we're being used here. We're being shown something to distract us from the real problems. We're not that thick, but then again, maybe we are. I don't know. So are we the moral arbiters, or do we in our core know that there's something off on this? I just don't
man, there's a whole load of big questions you've just opened there, Michael. We've barely talked about what actually happens in a change of mind.
And we totally need to get back to the episode.
We do.
So,
well,
yeah.
Okay, so let's get back to the episode. So number six's crime, according to the village, is making his own gym equipment to do his gym stuff in the forest. Rather
you know
than
what?
Using the village gymnasium, you know, like
I saw that as the final straw from all of the rest of his behaviour.
Well, yes, I think that's kind of like a very quick and easy way of visualising what it is.
Okay, I agree. Yep.
But yes, it's his individualism. He's basically like, well, I'm not going to, because there's lots of attempts in other episodes to be like, right, number six, you need to kind of play your part in village life, and there are moments where he kind of humours them. But he's clearly not interested, ultimately, in taking his place as a citizen. What is it that number two says? You're merely citizen number six, who must be tolerated, and if necessary shaped to fit. I think is something. It's on the Prisoner soundtrack. So I've heard that of all the lines in the episode, I've heard that one over and over again. And so there's an interesting word. Tolerant. So I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and I kind of feel that like a tolerant society, by definition, is one in which you will find yourself disagreeing with and even disliking a chunk of the population, right?
Okay.
And it may be on some issue you disagree with and dislike a majority of the population. It may be on another issue you find yourself in the majority, and there's a tiny proportion that you disagree with, right? But in a tolerant society, that's how we operate, right? Because in order to tolerate something, you have to first disagree or dislike it, right?
Yes.
If you accept it, if you agree with it, there's no need to tolerate it because you're fine with it, you know. You know, like when John Pertwee's Doctor finds himself trapped in the 1970s/80s, depending on where you think he's landed. He says, I tolerate this century, but I don't enjoy it.
Okay.
You know, and so, I think a lot of people think that tolerance means believing a certain set of values that happen to line up with my values. And I'm like, no, tolerance just means that I am prepared.
Putting up with?
I am prepared to put up with a certain range of disagreement.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously we will all draw boundaries as to kind of where we think is beyond the pale. You know, it's not that I think that like anything goes, right? But I think that we should be able to live in a society, and a liberal democracy is kind of like predicated on the idea that we can disagree about lots of things, but still go for a pint down the pub afterwards, you know? And I suppose for me, and I guess we're straying from the episode again, but for me...
So this is what happens if we don't have a number three.
Well, no, it's fine. But for me, growing up in the church...
yeah.
And this will seem very odd for our American listeners, because in America, at least until more recently, it was very clear which party you would vote for if you were a Christian. Whereas my experience of growing up in church was that there wasn't a particular party line to toe, right? And I grew up worshipping alongside people who I knew were conservatives and people who I knew were liberal democrats and people who I knew voted Labour. And my parents weren't particularly political. So there was a bigger thing that united us all that got past those kind of party political boundaries. And in a sense, we were tolerant of each other. And I guess what the village is the opposite of a tolerant society, because the village says, no, you must conform to a particular way of life.
Yes. Which is what McGowan's fighting against.
Which is what he's fighting against, yeah.
So...
And that's what gets him...
Yeah.
Kind of pulled up in front of the committee.
The nicest moment in the episode for me is where the guy is... Because he goes in to see the people in the striped shirts, but he has to go in the waiting room first.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan is you're in the waiting room when there's lots of people there, some crying, some not. Somebody, you go in, see the stripy people, come back, stand in the lectern, get told what to say as your apology, and then everybody claps and you go on your way.
Yes.
And he's not up for that. No. And there's those brilliant Kitchener-type posters as well with, your country needs you. That is really nice touch. It does make it believe more that the British are in charge of the village.
Yeah. But, yes.
But it's really nice. And then you see how it's supposed to act, and then you see it how it does act with the prisoner, and he just completely walks over the whole thing, which again brings us back to the TV thing. It's like we're telling people how we want them to apologise. And it's ridiculous. It's like, oh, actually, I've just remembered something. It was announced that Chibnall was going to become the runner for Doctor Who. And I was feeling in a sarcastic mood. And somebody said, so what are you looking for from Chibnall? And I went, all I want is a written apology for Cyberwoman. And that's it. And I thought, yeah, that's funny. It's glib. It's not what I actually want. Right? Because that was a design choice. That wasn't in the right writing. I've got to just let it go. Because that was about somebody trying to bring his girlfriend back from the dead. That's a nice story. But it was the design choice that was bad. And that was what I had an issue with. So there's part of me just wants to be glib all the time. And that's not clever. So I've got to let that go. I don't know why I brought it up. But probably because it was funny. And I just needed to shoehorn a Doctor Who story in there somewhere.
I think being glib is a legitimate response.
Yeah, fair enough.
To stuff.
Yeah.
I think particularly when and obviously number six is like this all the time, in that like the village wants him to take everything so seriously. Like you must take this aspect of our community that we've built here seriously, and he's just like, no, I'm not going to take it seriously because it's ridiculous.
He knows, you know? It's all a construct.
Yes,
that he will always never buy into it. Yeah, no matter what they say.
Yeah.
He always just goes, yep, it's still a prison. I'm still kept here. He'll always remind himself of that, no matter what's going on. But there's stuff going on in this episode, especially when he's beaten outside the thing. It's one of the few times the village actually turns on him, and it's not Rover. It's the populace. It's actually society who drag him off. But they're all playing the game because they want to make him think he's had the lobotomy. How you convince someone they've had a lobotomy, I suppose they're going to have a fuzzy head because they're pumping him full of meds.
Except he's very skillfully avoiding the meds.
Yeah, well, he does, but they are injecting him after he's been hit over the head with umbrellas and stuff. And then he gradually gets better. But they try to convince him to give up his storyline. But then he's like, well, I've just had a lobotomy. I've clearly forgotten. When it comes back to me, I'll tell you. Again, because that's the structure of the episode. That's the structure of the prisoner itself. Because they got the memo and said, do more about, you know, it's not split. It's not a jagged like a Talents of Wenchang where you've got a 4-episode and a 2-episode and a very perfect line of demarcation between them or something like that. You've got, they do fit together. Yeah. So I'm not as bad as all that, but it just feels like they've gone, and now we've done the society bit, let's move on to the spy bit with the interrogation and the tricking and business.
Yeah.
I've got the episode on in the background now, and
I'm just trying to remember how much of this is McGowan, this episode.
It's written by Roger Parks.
But it's directed by Joseph Cerf, which is one of McGowan's pseudonyms, isn't it?
Yeah, because he sacked the director on this one after like a day or something.
Oh, right. Okay, that was how this one... I mean, what does your man have to say about it, Alex Cox?
Well, Alex Cox just says we don't learn anything about him in this one. And I'm not completely convinced. Yeah, it's number 10 on the Cox list, so it's quite far on. Well, it's about halfway. It's just past halfway. You know what? I actually listened to the Alex Cox thing this morning, and a lot of it concerns... it's one of the shorter chapters. There's not that much that he has to say on it, because everything that needs to be said is kind of on the screen. He doesn't dissect it or anything. The beginning of the chapter is him talking primarily about a meeting with Lou Grade and McGowan and an American TV producer. And the TV producer says, are you sure you want to make the prisoner? Because a lot of American audiences might see him as a bit of a loser because he never escapes. And McGowan just literally got up and went, no thanks, I'll not be doing that. And the producer turns to Lou Grade and says, so how can you work with this guy? And he said, well, basically, I just let him do whatever he wants. And that's the end of that story. That's the story that takes up most of the Alex Cox chapter, because he breaks it down and he talks about, you know, because lobotomies were big news at the time. Mm-hmm. And the guy's actually referred to as a lobo man, not a robo man, a lobo man in the script.
Yes, he is.
With the little scars.
Yeah.
And he talks about, you know, the horrific reality of lobotomy with it being a major American thing. And he's using that to bring it down to, is it America, is it Russia, is it England? Because he's trying to be very practical about who controls the village.
Okay.
In his breakdown, he's trying all the time to work out who number six is and what's going on. And you can do that if you want, but for me, it's always going to be the allegory thing that's always going to be out.
I don't think that...
It's not helpful.
Well, to me, there's just... I mean, I'm torn, you know, because I like... There's obviously part of me, and I think this is probably like a human trait in that you want your stories to kind of have some underlying logic and sense.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah. You know, because like stories are how we navigate the world, you know. But with something like this, where there are so many obvious contradictions, in terms of like the location of the village, for example, we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Because there are so many ways that you can read it, and obviously we'll when we finally get to Fallout,
we'll have a massive argument.
There's so many ways that you can take that episode.
Yeah.
That I just think that is really irrelevant to my enjoyment of the show. Really, you know, because the other thing about this episode is. So yes, there's the focus on initially on the fact that number six is just one of a bunch of villagers who are joining this process. You know, like the committee isn't just there to deal with him, right? Like there's the guy who comes before him, who you talked about before, who gives his apology speech. There's number 42 who's crying. You know, there's other people in the waiting room. There's, like you say, the Lobo Man, who has he actually had a lobotomy, or has he been under the same process of being? We don't know.
For me, it's implied he has. He was on mutual. Excuse me. He was on mutual, and then he wasn't.
Yes.
And then he taps his head like he feels much better after the process.
Yeah. And then you've got those guys in
to sell
the
it to us in the audience. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And then you've got the guys in the aversion therapy room. You know, so it's not. But then, if you're thinking about the fact that, like, actually the prison is just there for him, like, if you're reading it on that level, you know.
Okay.
Then all of it is artifice to kind of make him think that he's just one prisoner among many. But on some level, they're actually all in on it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like the committee didn't exist before it was required for this episode.
Because we
haven't seen them before, we don't see them again, you know? There's all these different bits of the village that we discover for the purposes of the plot of an episode that we don't see again.
Yeah.
I don't really know where I was going with that thought, but
no, you're right, it's a construct. Like,
if you're kind of reading it on the basis of actually this is more an allegory, the village isn't actually a real place, it's just some kind of fiction that's going on in his head or whatever. This is just the next way that has been set up to kind of break him.
Mm-hmm. So let's bring it back again. As an episode, is it good? I mean, is this one that people were jumping over themselves to go, I'll be number three? Or was it left near the end of the list for people to jump on board with?
Well, this is the thing. So our guest who had chosen to do this episode had very little to choose from. And that was going to be one of our questions for him was, did you choose it because you really wanted to talk about it? Or did you choose it because it was the only one of the ones that was left that you wanted to talk about? It was one of the last slots that we filled in, which is why we're recording it now.
Because we've only got two left after this,
Obviously, dear listener, you have five to listen to because of the order with which we've recorded this. And we will stop banging on about that. No, we're not going to stop banging on about that. We'll keep on saying that we've recorded them out of order. but obviously, that's still quite a small sample. I'm familiar with fan wisdom when it comes to Doctor Who. But I'm not familiar with fan wisdom, really, when it comes to The Prisoner. I don't know what are the episodes that you're supposed to like and what are the episodes that you're supposed to dislike.
And we've kind of avoided that, both of us, during the research for this. I mean, I've read books, I've read up on stuff, but I've not, on purpose, gone out of my way to find out what am I supposed to like. Because that's just a weird approach to live life.
No, it is. It is.
And we only know Doctor Who because we just immersed ourselves in it so much for so long.
Well, and just because polls get run on Doctor Who all the time.
True.
You know. The thing is, I've got to a point in my life. I think the point when it all fell away for me was when I found myself unironically enjoying Time and the Rani about 10, 15 years ago. And I was just like, I like this, and it's okay to like this, and I know that I'm always going to be in the minority liking this, and that's fine, you know. And I find that I am often the contrarian when it comes to kind of opinions.
Oh, and then you find yourself using phrases like guilty pleasure, and you're like, I don't want to say that.
No,
this is a pleasure.
It's like, no, Time and the Run isn't a guilty pleasure, it's just a pleasure, and anybody who doesn't like it can start off. As far as I'm concerned. Yeah. Anyway.
You can tolerate them.
I can tolerate them, and as long as they can tolerate me, that's fine. No.
Your children will be next.
No. Anyway, I will tolerate people who disagree with me, whether they tolerate me or not. I don't care. Anyway, if you recall when my brother was on and we asked him about episodes that he liked and disliked, he said that this one was one of the few that he really didn't like. And I went into this, watching it again this morning, kind of being of that opinion, go, oh yeah, this is this one. I'm not particularly looking forward to it. Although I know that the subject matter is pertinent, as we have waffled on about today. I have come away probably enjoying it the most that I ever have, but then that's quite a low bar.
Yes. Yeah, I can agree with you on that,
I think,
completely.
Because I was watching it with the eye to thinking about how we were going to talk about it, I think I enjoyed it more. But I think as an episode of The Prisoner, it would be quite a long way down my list if I did a ranking. What about you?
I wish I had a different opinion so that I could fill our listeners' ears with something exciting and witty, but basically I'm in the same boat. It's a perfectly serviceable episode and there's nothing intrinsically wrong with it, but it doesn't inspire you. It hasn't got a ludicrously camp number two or something out of the ordinary or a mystery that you're watching going on going, oh, what really is going on? It doesn't floor you because it does one thing, then it does another thing. Number two loses to number six, but number six doesn't escape. It's not a filler episode and it says something, but that's about it. And I agree, you know, I have enjoyed it a lot more on this viewing, and it wasn't just filler because I was looking for something to say.
Yeah. So you talked about number two, in terms of what it doesn't have in number two. What we haven't really talked about John Sharp.
It's a lovely performance. I think it's because he's kind of, I want to say negate's the wrong word. He's giving up the role of person in charge to the society. And he's more of an observer in this one than a participant, for me.
Yes. It's weird because you have those scenes where he... And it's never really explained why Peter Swanick, as the supervisor, is hanging out with number two in number two's room. Because he's almost always in the surveillance room. Whereas he's just kind of this... I don't think he even says anything. He just stands there, doesn't he? And you get the odd close-up of him kind of looking at the screen in number two. But I don't think he ever actually said anything. He just kind of...
He just kind of stands there
and observes. Yeah. And is somebody for number two to kind of talk to and get cross... Not cross at, but cross to, because of how...
Cross with, almost. But yeah,
he's not cross with number...
He's not cross with him. He's joining in with the crossness.
Yes.
Does that... He's cross with him, as in together.
Yes. Yes. And it's those moments where the mask slips and he's like, oh, the stupid... It's like the misogyny of this number two.
That is very true. Because there's a lot of strong female characters throughout the village. And the butler in this is one of his better stories. He's just so menacing and he's just constantly there moving tables and just doing stuff. It's lovely. It's lovely because he plays everything so straight, so perfectly. It's just lovely performance, lovely moments.
Yes.
So shall we do the ever popular, did you see any actors that you recognise bit?
Oh, you think we've exhausted all that we can say about the episode?
I don't know, because we're just going... Are we going round in circles and just going, yeah, it deals with this, but doesn't? I don't know. I mean, is there something else you needed to say?
I don't know. I mean... I suppose I think you've summed up how I feel about the episode in terms of... It doesn't quite.
Yeah, I mean, number 86.
I don't think it quite lands.
You're right. She does. She does. It's as if she's played by lots of different actors. Because the characters like this and it's, but that's the whole construction of the village, and we're kind of used to it by now.
Yeah.
So
can I just say something about the direction of the moment where she's trying to drug his tea?
What, with a lovely Port Mirian pottery, kitchenware?
Yes. I mean, I wasn't really focused on the actual pottery. It was more the you keep cutting between number six kind of squinting over, and then the kind of closer and closer shots, like almost as if like number six has like zoom lenses for eyes, which obviously he doesn't. It's just it's a clever visual way of telling the audience that like he's thinking and observing and kind of trying to work out what it is that she's doing, and then he kind of, when you get the kind of ultra close up where she drops the tablet in, that's the moment where he's kind of like, ah,
yeah,
okay. And then, and that's kind of almost the moment where, because at that, up to that point, he has been acting as if he's been, as if he's convinced that he has had the lobotomy, you know. And then the moment that he sees that they're putting drugs in his tea, he's suddenly like, ah. And he turns on a dime. He's like, right, I'm going to get up and make my tea, you know. He kind of pulls himself out of the kind of slouching on the couch wanting a blanket and going, right, this is a con. I know it's a con. And I'm going to do what I can to stop them giving me this drug, you know.
Okay, yeah, I see.
And he
that.
Kind of does that kind of like, it's almost, it's the sort of sleight of hand magician type thing where he kind of, he tells the story of how you make a decent cup of tea to distract her, and then he gets her to do something so that he can switch the cups of the cups over, and he does it with his back to the camera so that he's hiding it from number two as well, because number two's watching, and number two doesn't realise it's happened until she starts acting like she's been drugged. So I liked the direction of that scene.
No, it is nice. It is nice. It's not Iocane powder, Isaac. So yeah.
No. Yeah. It's yes. It's not. It's not the Princess Bride.
No.
Oh well. Okay. Let's talk actors then. So there are three.
Three. Oh great.
I would expect you to. Well, one of them we've seen before.
Right.
But it's been so long since we recorded the episode, you've probably forgotten that I said at that point you were going to see him again. One of them. His only credited Doctor Who role, he's under a lot of prosthetics, so I wouldn't expect you to recognise him at all, because I didn't. So there's one of these that I would totally expect you to have spotted and went, oh, it's him.
Oh.
So who did you spot anybody?
I wasn't paying attention. I was just happy I'd seen Forrester from UFO. Oh.
Who's actually called Foster, but you somehow Foster, have it in your head that he's called Forrester.
I do. I can't help it. It's too late now. Can't go back and fix that. Yeah. Okay, right. So Foster.
So, yes. Well, let's talk about him. I know we've avoided talking about UFO actors because we did all that when we did the UFO cast.
Yeah,
but
we did.
He is like the most high profile UFO star to be in The Prisoner. And he got his role in the UFO because the casting director remembered him from this.
Cool.
Because she was the casting director for both shows.
Mm.
So it's worth mentioning that. It's a very small role, but he's good. I think he's good, isn't he?
Well, yeah.
In his brief bit of screen time.
Yeah, he's not just, you know, random hood. So that works, yeah.
You know, they actually have some good dialogue before they have their punch-up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he is. He's very good.
Which, obviously, that fight alternates between Patrick McGoohan and Patrick McGoohan's stunt double, depending on whether you're seeing him from the front and behind.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Michael Billington does all of his own punching.
Well, he wasn't a star, so yeah.
No.
Yeah, well, that's the Michael Caine thing, isn't he? He turned up in Zulu, and they were all kind of more concerned about the horse. And one of the other actors took him to one side and said, "No, they'll not be nice to you until you've been shooting for a few weeks. And once you're actually in the film and they can't replace you, then they'll start being nice to you." So that's it. Once you're an actual established star in the thing, everyone's nice to you and treats you with a bit more respect. And that's exactly what happened. So that's a nice thing. So yeah, he's just some very good bit part in this, and it works. But also, there are three Doctor Who actors.
Yeah.
I'm trying to work out who. I'm failing miserably, as always. I just can't do people out of context. It's so bad.
Okay, well, I'll put you out of your misery then, shall I?
Go for it.
So, we will start with Michael Miller, who plays number 93.
Okay.
Who's the guy that you talked about who comes out and gives his confession.
Oh, yeah, right.
Now, we previously saw him in The General.
Okay.
As the guy who comes and gives number 6 a lift back to his house.
Yeah.
To go to his speed learn lesson. And we will see him again in Fallout as something. I'm not quite sure what. I don't remember him in Fallout. As we said last time, he played Woolnoth in The Time Meddler. Leader of the Saxon village that is being conned by the meddling monk. And whose wife gets raped. So it's very, very jolly for him. You don't remember that bit?
No, I'm gonna have
it's
to
more,
go back
it's more,
and watch
it. It's more.
Is
it's
it implied?
More, it's implied. Yes, it's implied that she's been raped. But it's very. It's as a child watching it, it would go over your head. But as an adult watching it, it's very clear what's happened to her.
Well, I know and what I'm watching tonight.
And it's very clear as to why the Saxons then track down these two Vikings and brutally murder them. And okay. why that bit of the episode is the bit that was cut when it went to Australia and New Zealand.
Right.
And that's the bit that they've had to reconstruct for the Blu-ray. I believe I haven't got the Blu-ray of
Ditto.
Of it because
I'm,
I haven't
I'm
been
waiting
collecting
for it. Now I'm waiting for that Blu-ray to come out in the slightly cheaper, not taking up your entire shelf box, which takes up a lot less room.
Yes, I think for the DVD they didn't bother trying to reconstruct those few seconds. They just kind of released the audio of it and said, "This is the audio of these two Vikings getting murdered by the." Well, I say murdered, executed. I think. It's probably the right word.
I'm pretty sure
crimes.
I've only got that on DVD. So anyway, yeah.
Anyway, so that's
yeah,
him.
So
that's
him.
A long waffle. Okay. we will then do the one that you shouldn't recognise because he's
because of the prosthetics. Yeah.
Because of the prosthetics. So Bartlett Mullins, and that name meant nothing to me at all. He was the committee chair. He's the committee chairman.
Ah, right.
And he played the second Censorite elder.
Identifiable by his sash.
Yes, so he's the one that the city administrator steals the sash off and then pretends to be him.
That's a brilliant society.
It's a hilarious society. It's just the fact that it hasn't occurred to any of them until one of the humans points it out.
Ooh,
just, well,
I'll just put
if
this
you
on.
Just swap the sash, then nobody will know that you're what? Yeah.
Are you saying we all look the same, racist?
Yes. Anyway, least said about that story, the better, I think.
Yeah.
But the one that you should have spotted.
Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna tell you which character it was, and then I'm gonna see if you can suddenly kind of go, oh.
All right.
Right. So the Doctor.
The woman?
No, the doctor with the Eastern European accent who does his kind of knee reflexes and then kind of, I think, sees him again after he's supposedly had a lobotomy and goes, "You're doing okay, number 6.
Literally no memory. Nope.
No? Okay. He's played by George Pravda.
Oh, hang on, that name's familiar.
That name should ring a bell because he was in Doctor Who 3 times.
Oh, now I'm just showing myself up. Just put me out of my misery.
Yes, so George Pravda, I'd be terrible. I'd have to look him up. Somewhere in Eastern Europe he's from originally. He played Alexander Denish in The Enemy of the World.
Okay.
So the dude who is ousted by Salamander. And
oh,
then
I've literally just seen it the once. That's
gets
fine.
gets killed in a corridor. I mean, his bit was in the episode that survived. You know, before
I was going
to
say,
was found.
If there was somebody getting killed in the corridor, that would be the surviving episode.
That was
the reason that everybody went.
Yes.
Oh, this is just a load of corridors.
Yes.
No.
So before the rest of it was found, his bit was still there. Anyway, the scientist Jaeger in the mutants. So the dude who's trying to kind of bombard missiles at the planet to make it habitable for humans. Him. And obviously John Pertwee's Doctor does not like him. But his most famous role, Castellan Spandrel from The Deadly Assassin. Where obviously you don't get to see his hair because he's wearing one of those Gallifreyan skull caps. So I spotted him immediately watching this episode. But
I shall duly go away. And
we should do a podcast where we do this bit the other way around.
No, because you'll just win.
Where you do the research and I have to try and.
Well, all right. Tell you what.
Show off my knowledge.
When we do the next project, that's what we'll do. Okay.
What's the next project, Michael?
Well, if I'm tempted to do the for your consideration.
Oh yeah.
Where
okay.
We both bring things to the table that the other one hasn't seen.
Yes.
Obscure, terrible things.
Well, I think I've already agreed to watch Night of the Demon, haven't I?
You have. So, you have watched that, which is not.
I haven't watched it yet.
Terrible thing. Yeah, well,
I haven't watched it yet. I've agreed to watch it so we can podcast about it.
Yeah, but we have to do this. But what we'll do is we'll do that like once a month. And then we'll just chat. So I promise you, I will do the research. And if there are any Doctor Who actors in any of the things that we watch, we shall share.
We should do that. Cool. Do we have anything else to say about A Change of Mind?
No. It was a perfectly decent episode. Which is damning with faint praise, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I'll just reiterate, I enjoyed it more this time than I have before, but that is not saying a lot. And I think I've enjoyed chatting to you about it more than I have more than
that
I
That is true actually, yeah. You're not wrong.
I think that is it for today, so I guess we just leave you to sign off, Michael.
In that case, until next time, be seeing you.